What is going on, sports fans? Welcome into the Glass Half Full and ESPN Pensacola podcast with me, Jordan Glass. Thank you so much for tuning in. And on today's show, we're going to be talking a little NBA, a little Major League Baseball, NFL, some college football, some local sports, a little bit of everything. So let's go ahead and dive into it. And we're going to start with the Steelers, as they got a little tough news on the defensive side of the ball. Cornerback Cameron Sutton suspended 8 games for violating the NFL's personal conduct policy. Sutton actually got into some legal issues back in March of this year with a domestic violence type situation. In April, as a matter of fact, a month later, he actually entered a pretrial diversion program to resolve the domestic violence case go against those charges, those misdemeanor charges that he had in resulting of the situation. NFL's come out and said, yeah, he's going to be suspended 8 weeks. This does not count the preseason. It's going to be from week one of the regular season all the way to week 8 without pay, too. So he does not get paid for those weeks either. I know sometimes the NFL will suspend a player. The player will still get paid for those weeks. That is not going to be the case with Cameron Sutton here. The NFL really... kind of trying to change that image that they had. I mean, you remember a few years ago, it seemed just like it was like every team had a player that was, you know, in some hot water with domestic violence. I mean, you had the Ray Rice situation and all the other ones that came out of it. And the NFL has really tried to do a good job, and they have done a good job of late of letting it be known they are not going to tolerate this type of behavior, that if you act in this particular manner or if there is any kind of case against you in this particular way, that you will not be playing in the NFL, you know, and they'll give you that warning or they'll give you that suspension. And if it continues to happen, you know, then it's going to be a situation where you're going to be put out of the league. And it's very tough when you're tied to something like this. Not a lot of teams are going to want to show interest in you, right? I mean, he had signed with the Detroit Lions, and Detroit cut him. They released him because of this stuff happening earlier this year, and he ends up signing and going back to Pittsburgh. So it's one of those situations to where the NFL really kind of putting their foot down in this situation. So Cameron Sutton going to be suspended for 8 weeks for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He'll be able to come back week 8 when they take on the New York Giants. And Steelers are one of those teams, man. If you look at and you talk to anybody's listings as far as those teams that are going to be on the rise for the 2024 season, the Steelers are on just about every single list. And let's not forget, they didn't even have that bad of a year last year, right? Didn't they still manage to win 10 games? Still were, you know, in the hunt and all that good stuff. And so they didn't have a terrible year last year. It just wasn't up to the normal standards we see from Pittsburgh. So they're expected to be a better team this year. But that is going to be with Cameron Sutton. And now they're not going to have him the first 8 weeks of the season. Is that going to leave some secondary depth issues for them as they start off this season? And, I mean, you know, let's face it. I mean, the first 8 weeks of the season are extremely, extremely crucial. You know, you don't think about how really, honestly, truthfully, the first couple of weeks of the season are crucial. But look into the statistics of it and how many teams start 0-3 or 1-2 and still make the playoffs. Let alone you're talking a whole 8-game stretch to start off the season with a top defender not there because of the suspension. How is that going to play out for Pittsburgh? I'm sure that they'll probably have a contingency plan in place. You know, you bring him in knowing that this was a possibility. So I think that they probably will have a contingency plan in place. But only time will tell. You know, we'll see how it plays out for the Steelers. But, yeah, it's going to be tough for them first 8 weeks of the season without a guy like Cameron Sutton there on the defensive side of the ball at the cornerback position. But, you know, you do the crime, you got to do the time. And that's not just a jail thing; it's a suspension thing as well. When you're when you're a professional athlete, if you do something boneheaded, you've got to pay the time. Not only whether that's, you know, they see fit to give you jail time, but also suspension as well. Whether that's brought down by the league or the team, you got to serve it. There's nothing you can really do about it. You can appeal it, But like I said, in this situation, the NFL has done such a great job of trying to change and correct that narrative and that image that they had of being a league full of people who commit domestic abuse. They're really trying to, you know, get their foot going in the right direction as far as that topic goes, and really say that, hey, we're not okay with that type of behavior. And so, I mean, you can appeal it, but I don't think that appeal is really going to go too far, because like I said, the NFL really kind of looking to change that image that they kind of had created the last, what, handful of years ago with all of those domestic abuse situations that they had come out with several different players. And I mean, even the situation with Deshaun Watson, you know, I would even bet that the league, if Deshaun Watson suddenly just kind of disappeared and didn't play another down in the NFL, I don't think the NFL front offices would be too broken up about that, because every time he steps on the field, it's just a reminder of what this guy that plays in the NFL did. So, you know, they want to send a message to Cameron Sutton and say, hey, 8 games, half the season, you cannot play because of what happened here. And rightfully so. Domestic violence should not be accepted anywhere, right? You shouldn't, you know, make any kind of excuses or defend it in any way, shape, or form. So good for the NFL suspending Cameron Sutton for 8 games for the Pittsburgh Steelers, as he is in violation of the NFL's personal conduct policy. So he'll serve that suspension again without pay. Speaking of pay, Paul George, he's singing like a bird now that he signed his big deal with the Philadelphia 76ers. He's coming out and saying that, you know what? I actually was willing to stay in LA with the Clippers. And I think the reasoning behind why he didn't is not really a surprise. I think a lot of people kind of saw the writing on the wall and saw that this might be the case, and it had to do with Kawhi Leonard, right? Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, they came into the Clippers organization about the same time. They were at least referred to as being on the same level and equals by the Clippers front office and the Clippers management. So Paul George just simply went to them and was like, all right, if you're going to extend his contract for, you know, give him an extra 3 years and then $150 million on top of that, that's what I want. I want 3 years, $150 million. I'm not asking to get paid more than Kawhi. I'm just saying that if Kawhi and I came here in the same time, Kawhi and I are seen as equals in this organization and pay us both the same. The Clippers responded with a 2-year, $60 million deal, and Paul George was like, excuse me? And I don't blame him one bit. I don't blame him one bit, because everything, think about it. When the Clippers, just before free agency happened, the Clippers came out and they were talking this game up about how, oh yeah, we want to build our own big three. We want to keep Kawhi. We want to keep Paul George, and we want to keep James Harden. And we want that to be our core three that we build this franchise out around. Okay, so you have those three guys, and you offer Kawhi Leonard an extension that's worth 3 years, $150 million. And then Paul George gets 2 years, $60 million. That is a difference of $90 million. That is a lot of money. I'll say that again. That is a difference of $90 million. I don't blame Paul George one bit for being pissed off. I would be too. I would pack my bags and go to another team too. And that's exactly what he did. And he ended up going out to Philadelphia, where he signed a 3-year max deal, $212 million for the deal. I mean, the Clippers, I don't know what the Clippers front office thought that they were going to accomplish by offering him such a cruddy deal. Right? When you extend Kawhi Leonard and you're saying, yeah, we want these three guys are going to be the staple of our team, and you extend Kawhi Leonard to 3 years, $150 million, and then you go look at Paul George and you go, well, we're going to give you 2 years for $60 million. Really? That is so ridiculous to me. And what's funny is, It's the same deal that they gave James Harden. Harden signed a 2-year, $70 million deal. So it actually would have been $10 million less than Harden would have gotten. How do you say that that's your big three and that they're equal across the board? You're going to pay one $150 million a year. One is going to get $70 million, and then one's going to get $60 million. And you expect the one that's going to get $60 million, who is arguably the number one or number two player in that big three, to just sit there and take that deal? Look, I know it's legal for the green stuff out in California, right? If you got the, you know, you got the medical cards and all that stuff. I think the Lakers front, or not the Lakers, but the Clippers front office, they got some pretty strong stuff being passed around in there if they think that Paul George was actually going to ever agree to this deal. I don't blame Paul George one bit for thinking that it's disrespectful and wanting to go somewhere else. I would too. I would have too. I don't blame him one bit. I'm still shocked that the Clippers even thought that they could extend Kawhi Leonard the way that they did and then try to put Paul George and James Harden on that same level with that type of deal. You were going to pay James Harden $10 million more than you were going to pay Paul George. You were going to pay Kawhi Leonard $90 million than you were going to pay Paul George. And you expect him to be okay with those types of deals? Nah, get out of here. Come on. There's a reason why he's wearing a 76ers jersey. And honestly and truthfully, if you're a Clippers fan and you're mad that Paul George is no longer a Clipper, be mad at your front office, not Paul George. All right, so all those angry tweets you fired off at Paul George about how you'll never wear his jersey again, and you know you did it. You know who I'm talking about. Be mad at your front office. They're the reason Paul George is going to be wearing a 76ers jersey next year and not a Clippers jersey. So there you go. The Yankees, they are, I don't even know how to word this. Losing streak, a slide, any of those terms that you want to use, I think could fit with what the Yankees are doing right now. They have won 5 of their last 20 games. Did you catch that? 5 of their last 20 games. It means they are 5-15 in their last 20 matchups. Lots of people are kind of trying to figure out what is going on with this team, because this is a team that started the season off as one of the hottest teams in all of Major League Baseball, not just the American League, but all of Major League Baseball. At one point in June, they were, 28 games over 500 in the middle of June. And now here we are kind of a couple of weeks into July already. They've won 5 of their last 20. And people are starting to ask questions and wonder, because they're noticing a pattern, right? They're kind of noticing that around this time of year, the Yankees tend to kind of start to trail off a little bit. And it kind of leads to them having either a letdown and no postseason appearance, or it's an early exit for them in the postseason. So a lot of people are starting to point fingers at Aaron Boone as the manager and saying, you know what? Maybe it is Aaron Boone. And I will say this for Aaron Boone. He coddles that clubhouse. He does. I don't know if it's because he knows the fragile egos he has inside that clubhouse, but when guys are having mental lapses and they're making miscues and mistakes on the field and they're just not playing well, and he comes out and he defends them and he's, you know, oh, well, you know, we'll get it back going. It's only a matter of time. We've got everything out in front of us. Everything's out in front of us. You as a manager have to hold yourself accountable, and you have to hold your team and your clubhouse accountable. Hell, Bobby Cox, when he was the manager of the Atlanta Braves, put Andrew Jones on the bench because Andrew wasn't hustling hard enough in the game. He wasn't missing pop-ups. He was still making plays, but he wasn't hustling hard enough in the game. Bobby Cox put him on the bench. That's how a manager is supposed to operate. you shouldn't go out there and go and somebody ask, well, you know, it just didn't seem like he was given the urgency or the intensity that he normally does. Well, you know, he's probably just tired. Maybe he missed his pregame nap. You know, we'll have to work on, you know, scheduling out some nap time for him in between warm-ups and you know, getting him a little bit of a rest in before pregame. No, there was none of that. That's the reason, one of the reasons why that team was so good is because Bobby Cox held that clubhouse accountable. Whether it was John Smoltz, Tom Glavin, Greg Maddux, Chipper Jones, Andrew Jones, any of those guys, Rafael Furcal, Gary Sheffield, whoever it was, during that time frame that he was the manager of the Atlanta Braves, he held that clubhouse accountable. Aaron Boone doesn't really do that. People are starting to notice that. People are starting to also put two and two together that it's about this time of year every year that the Yankees tend to start to trail off. Their urgency isn't what it was at the start of the season. And maybe the fact that Aaron Boone coddles that clubhouse is a reason for that. I will counter that with also telling you baseball is a game of streaks as well, right? Because what was it, 2-3 months ago, we had this same conversation about the Astros where it seemed like the Astros could not win a game to save their lives. Teams go on streaks all the time in baseball. Whether it's high school, whether it's college, whether it's minor leagues, whether it's major leagues, it doesn't matter. The game of baseball is a very streaky game. You are going to have highs and you are going to have lows. And that's honestly and truthfully why if you look at the teams that compete for a World Series and that get into the postseason and make those deep runs, you want to know why they make those deep runs and they get to the World Series? They're playing really good baseball at the right time. Right. And then you have these teams who dominate all regular season long. And then all of a sudden, right as they hit the postseason or the last couple of weeks of the season leading into the postseason, they hit a slump and they get knocked out in the first couple of rounds. It's not because they're a bad team. It's not because they overperformed in the regular season. They just, unfortunately, it was their time to hit a slump. Right now, it's the Yankees' time to hit a slump. Do I think the Yankees have issues with Aaron Boone as far as how he handles that clubhouse and the players in said clubhouse? Yes. Yes. I think Aaron Boone needs to hold that team a little bit more accountable for their mental lapses on and off the field. But also at the same time, you got to remember this is a streaky game and they started off the season hot. So it's going to make sense that right about the All-Star break, they're going to start cooling off. Who knows? Taking the All-Star break off, coming back afterwards, they could be right back at being one of the hottest teams in Major League Baseball again. So you can't really just count them out because they're 5-15 in their last 20 games. Because sometimes that's how it is. Sometimes you start off the season like the Tampa Bay Rays did last year and you go, what was it, 23-0 or something like that to start the season off? And then you hit another 20-game stretch where you're like 3-17. That's just how baseball works, all right? I don't think the Yankees should be hitting a panic button anytime soon. Should they kind of look into Aaron Boone a little bit more and how he handles the clubhouse? Absolutely. Is that something to where I'm going to sit here and go, Aaron Boone should be fired? No. I think that's just one thing where management for the Yankees have to sit Aaron Boone down and go, you got to start doing a better job of holding this clubhouse more accountable. When they're slacking off with their urgency, when they're having mental lapses and mistakes on the field during games, you've got to hold them more accountable. You don't have to embarrass them in front of the media, but you got to hold them more accountable. Again, going back to the way Bobby Cox did things in Atlanta, held that team accountable. He didn't embarrass them in front of the media, but he still held them accountable. Aaron Boone's got to do that with the Yankees because their consistency just isn't there. Right, the urgency drops off around this time every year. You've got to make sure that you keep them all locked in and focused and holding them accountable inside that clubhouse in private team meetings is exactly how you go about doing that. So we'll see if the Yankees can kind of pull out of this tailspin they are in right now. So, but again, you know, like I said, I fully expect them to. Baseball, it's a streaky sport. College football, SEC football media days for the first time ever. Heading to the Lone Star State, heading to Dallas, July 15th through the 18th. So that'll be next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. They will be there. And definitely looking forward to lots of different things that we will see and hear with the SEC football media days happening in Dallas. First and foremost, it's going to be very interesting to see because Dallas is Big Ten country, right? That's not Big Ten, excuse me, Big 12. That's Big 12 country. You know, it's where they play the Big 12 Conference Championship every year. So it's very interesting to see how the SEC is going to be perceived there with SEC media days. But I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Definitely looking to see how Oklahoma and Texas, the two new members, how they handle SEC media days with all the questionings and things like that they're going to get. Then you've also got new coaches. I mean, Kalen DeBoer. Obviously, that's the big name in the SEC that you're keeping an eye on now as a head coach, as he's taken over there at the University of Alabama after Nick Saban retired. It's going to be his first media days in the SEC as a head coach. So I'm definitely looking to see how Kalen DeBoer kind of goes about doing things. He's definitely changed things up and has changed kind of the way things are done there at the University of Alabama. I mean, he's brought in DJs into team meetings and things like that to kind of help with team morale, which is not things we saw with Nick Saban. Does not mean that Coach DeBoer is going to struggle at Alabama. It doesn't mean that. And I know there's a lot of people that go, oh, well, you know, he just doesn't do things the way that Saban did it, so it's just not going to translate well. It's not necessarily true. Just because he does things differently doesn't mean he's not going to have any less or any more success on the field. So definitely looking forward to hearing from him at his first SEC Media Days. Mike Elko, the new guy at Texas A&M coming over from Duke. Definitely going to be interesting to see what he has to say about A&M. I mean, he's inherited a mess with the Aggies is what he's got. You know, I mean, you kind of look at, there's been some coaches that have taken over situations in college football the last few years, keeping it within the SEC. Billy Napier at Florida kind of had the same thing, had a mess. That program wasn't necessarily well organized when he took over after Dan Mullen, and Mike Elko is kind of having to do the same thing with the Aggies there at A&M. So definitely going to be looking forward to seeing what he has to say. Lots of people high on the Aggies, thinking maybe they might struggle this year, not be a bad team, but struggle obviously, and you know, pretty much a new roster with a new head coach. You know, it's going to be kind of a little bit of an up and down year for them, probably about a 6-6, 7-5 type season. But the years after that, lots of people thinking Mike Elko could be a guy that gets Texas A&M to be a top 10 team for the next few years to come and keep them in that playoff conversation. So we'll see what happens there. I mentioned Billy Napier a moment ago. I'm really looking forward to seeing what he has to say because he is going into his third season at the University of Florida. There is no more excuses, right? The whole, well, Billy Napier just doesn't have his guys at Florida. He's still got Dan Mullen guys. He's still trying to clear out, you know, all the guys from Dan Mullen that maybe aren't necessarily buying in all the way. He didn't have those excuses this year. This is his team. This is his first team at the University of Florida that is his players, his fingerprint, his design, his schemes. And if he doesn't get the job done, he could very well be on his way out the door. And I know, we've talked about their schedule before on this show and how brutal it is, or at least how brutal it seems on paper. But I think that Miami game is winnable. I think Central Florida is winnable. And honestly and truthfully, if you look down the stretch, some of those games on that murderer's row, if you will, of the back half of their schedule, LSU lost a lot of talent, including their starting quarterback, to the NFL draft. They're going to be in a little bit of a rebuild this year. Florida State, we don't know what we're going to get from Florida State this year, right? I mean, they could be just as good as they were a year ago, or they could take a step back. Who knows? So there's two of those five teams in that back stretch that we don't really know anything about. Ole Miss, they get Ole Miss in the swamp. That's going to be a big benefit for them. I believe that's also scheduled to be a night game already. So, you know, Ole Miss in the swamp at night. Last time a top 10 Ole Miss team came into the swamp at night, didn't go too well for them. So I'm just saying that schedule might not be as complicated as when you really sit there and break it down. It might not be as complicated for Florida as we think. So if Billy Napier cannot get it done this year, I think if it is a 6-6 season or something along those lines, I think Florida's going to be looking for a new coach. So it's going to be interesting to hear from Billy Napier heading into this SEC media days. Because like I said, it's his program now. There is no more, oh, well, he's still got Dan Mullen guys. He's still having to deal with Dan Mullen recruits. No, this is his team, his players, his guys, his coaches. The foundation has been laid. The foundation he kept talking about building, you know, that we're building a strong foundation. It's built. It's there. It's time for Florida fans to see some results, and they definitely want to see results. And if you don't give them results, if Florida is limping into that game against Georgia with like a 3-2 record or something along those lines, whoo, go ahead and get your short list ready for who's going to replace Billy Napier at Florida if that's the case, because Florida fans are not going to be happy about that. Also, definitely looking forward to hearing from Hugh Freeze. He's heading into year two at Auburn. I thought that was a great hire for them at Auburn. You know, Hugh Freeze is a guy that, yes, he had his issues with the escort services and the burner phones and all that stuff at Ole Miss. But he also was the guy that consistently in the SEC beat Nick Saban or was a thorn in Nick Saban's side. So I thought it was smart for Auburn to go hire him to be their new head coach. Obviously, now it's not something they have to worry about with Nick Saban retired, but I still think Hugh Freeze can get Auburn back on the map and get them playing some really good football. So I'm definitely looking forward to hearing from him and the Auburn Tigers. And Stoops, you know, Coach Stoops there in Kentucky looked like for a period of time during the offseason before Mike Elko got the job that Stoops might leave and go to A&M. You know, so I'm sure there probably are going to be some questions by a couple of people asked about that during the big press conference. But it's definitely going to be a lot of fun. SEC Football Media Day is coming up in Dallas next week, July 15th through the 18th. You can, of course, catch coverage of that live around the clock on SEC Network. And you better believe that we are going to be talking about all of it right here on The Glass Half Full. And, of course, coming up, probably starting towards the end of next week, we're going to start taking a look at teams by teams, getting ready for the college football season. We're going to take a look at SEC teams. So we're going to take a look at ACC teams, Big 10, Big 12. We're going to be going through those conferences, and we'll probably do, you know, a couple of teams a show and kind of look break down the team, what to expect from them in 2024, and look at their schedule and see what kind of record is realistic for them. And I give my pick and my opinion on what I expect to happen with them throughout the upcoming season, because we're getting about that time. We're about a month and a half or so, a little more than that, away from the start of the college football season. So it's time to start looking at some of those college football teams and breaking it down and getting you ready for that season. And that'll get started next week, obviously talking about SEC Media Days, but we'll also have those team previews getting started as well right here on The Glass Half Full. We'll close out today's show with a little baseball, a little local news as far as baseball goes. Darian McDowell, who is a graduate of Tate High School and played some ball at UWF, he is looking to enter the Major League Baseball draft. He's had some pretty good numbers, pretty great numbers, honestly, in his time at UWF. He's working his butt off right now, making sure that his name is called coming up in the next few months whenever the draft happens. And, of course, if it is, he will actually be the first Argo in 9 years to be drafted into the Major League Baseball. So definitely looking forward to that. Always proud of not only our Argos, but our local high school athletes, and he happens to be both. So double proud of Darian McDowell. Wish him nothing but the best of luck. Hopefully his name gets called during the MLB draft. And even if it's not, he can actually come back and play his final season at UWF. He's eligible to do that. So come back, put up another year, great numbers, and then re-enter the draft the following summer. So definitely looking forward to that. But hopefully Darian McDowell hears his name called, and we can talk about another Tate Aggie / UWF Argo heading to Major League Baseball. That is going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in. We will have more Glass Half Full coming your way tomorrow. This is The Glass Half Full, an ESPN Pensacola podcast with me, Jordan Glass. You have a great Tuesday. We'll see you tomorrow.